The views and opinions expressed by A Little Bit Culty are those of the hosts and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the podcast. Any content provided by our guests, bloggers, sponsors, or authors are of their opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, group, club, organization, business individual, anyone, or anything. Hi, everyone. I am Sarah Edmondson, and I'm here with...
Hi, I'm Anthony Ames, Sarah's husband, a.k.a. Nippy.
And we're here to talk about things that are a little bit culty. Speaking of, we were in a cult, and we woke up, thank goodness, and we have a lot to say.
And a lot to ask.
This podcast is going to be a deep dive into everything from the red flags to the narcissism, the manipulation, the resiliency, the recovery process, and everything in between. Also, we want to share some of the good we got out of it so you can get all the nuggets without having to join a cult.
If you haven't already, because there are a lot of things out there that are just a little bit culty.
Welcome to A Little Bit Culty, a podcast about the fads, beliefs, and trends that blur the line between healthy and a little bit culty. Please subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And find us on Instagram if you have any suggestions for things you have found to be a little bit culty. Under the surface, the water fills my lungs.
This ground I worship has swallowed up its young. And you give for a promise.
Good morning, Anthony.
Good morning, Sarah. Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary, babe.
It's our actual anniversary.
8 years.
Little known fact, when we were planning our wedding, we wanted to have a private wedding, and then it grew because a certain someone wanted to plan it.
Not me.
Not going to name names, but it might be your mom. And then we had another one in the fall.
Just to specify, we were going to have a private, small ceremony, so partly to get your citizenship going. So it's just going to be like, let's just sign the papers, and then of course, we wanted my parents there, and then, you know.
And my dad flew out.
And then your dad, and then my grandpa, and then... I had to have some bridesmaids, and then you had some groomsmen, and then it was like 14
people.
Then it
was like a great wedding, and I was like, Dad, they want to have another one. And
but then we had to have a big party.
A big one. He's like, well, who do you think this is for?
So then we had another really big party.
Which was great.
It was great.
Yeah. Our wedding is still talked about to this day. And it's become controversial since it was one of the best weddings people had gone to. It became one of the more controversial because we had
so many SPNs there. But we also had the wedding, I have to say. It was very Sarah. I mean, I did plan the whole thing. Nippy just showed up. I think you organized your suit.
Yeah, date and time.
You organized his suit and...
I got peeps there.
And then at the end of the night, he was like, that was a great night. Thanks.
It was.
Well, we had a sake bar. We had these little stations of like different types of foods and... But it was very me. Like, we also served green juice, and we had an organic raw ganache chocolate cake by our friend Preet, who makes the best chocolate cake. It was a really special wedding. But we celebrate today. It's May 4th, and we celebrate today. This is when we had our actual, and we got married, signed the paperwork in our very intimate garden ceremony with 14
great.
People. It was very... We
dad
had two,
pulled out the guitar.
My dad played guitar.
Threw some flowers at me. It was great.
It was a good ceremony. May the 4th be with you.
That's right.
Anyway, it's kind of cool that we're doing a podcast on our anniversary because I think this podcast...
Our wedding was consensual.
Our wedding was consensual. We right. consented to marry each other. We were contacted by some women in the U.S. who are working really hard to change consent laws. And they'd reached out to us to get us on board to see if we could help use our platforms in any way to support this bill. And in our conversations with them, we realized...
Yeah, well, I had like 20 emails I hadn't responded to that had consent in the subject. And I would be like, what's this consent email I keep getting? And finally, I open it, read it. And then I was like, we need to get on the phone with them. She's like, I know, I've been trying to do this for 2-3 weeks. And I was like, well, why didn't you tell me? She's like, well, I sent you 20 emails. I think most people can relate to that. And we got on the horn with them. Actually, we didn't get on the horn with them. We got on Zoom with them. And they told us their story, and I told Sarah when we got off the phone with them, I was like, we need to do a final episode.
So I know we keep saying this is our...
I think this is the bonus episode. Our producers politely disagree.
Whether it's the bonus episode or the final episode, we actually don't know.
It ties our first season up perfectly because it is about consent.
And we couldn't wait till season 2. And I think it's really important all the different groups that we've researched and talked about and had as guests on our show, consent plays an important part because people wouldn't consent to what they ended up getting involved with had they known what the thing actually was, whether it's a yoga group or an abusive boss or a...
Well, anything abusive. I mean, I think it ties into the theme of what I've tried to keep our podcast in the lane of is abuses of power. I think people, when they get power, consciously or unconsciously abuse it. And defining consent laws is a great way to hold those abuses accountable. So consent can be nebulous and is misunderstood. And we have some guests on that are going to get a clear definition in the books, quite literally the books, hopefully legally. Writing legislation to address the problems and using a due process speaks to me because I found myself in my personal life unwittingly aligned with something I didn't consent to, and I know Sarah did as well. So having nebulous areas defined will help people be precise in what they're agreeing to. Abuses of power are everywhere, and defining terms is always a great first step in holding these abuses accountable. What we're talking about today is a new bill in New York State, Bill A654. And it seeks to do exactly that, define the terms of consent and clarify what lawful sexual conduct is.
It defines consent as freely given, knowledgeable, informed agreement. Bill A6540 further defines consent as something that is, quote, obtained without the use of malice, such as forcible compulsion, duress, coercion, deception, fraud, concealment, or artifice. In a public statement in early 2021, New York Assemblymember Rebecca Seawright, who sponsored this bill, said, "The proper definition of consent in New York laws will clarify lawful sexual conduct, guide behavior, and make it possible to hold sexual predators accountable."
I'm sure the people of New York like the sound of that, holding sexual predators accountable.
Yes, we love definitions. And more than anything, we want to help create and empower healing with this podcast.
As Sarah and I have learned, justice goes a long way in healing.
Yes.
So after our call with our guests, the congruencies were obvious right away. And I suggested to Sarah this would be the ideal way to end our podcast. So we had them on to get them to expand on why this bill matters, why consent needs a legal definition and not, quote, a common sense one, end quote, and why every one of our listeners in New York State might want to give their senator and assembly member a call or drop them an email as soon as possible. And we'll get more into how you can do that.
Yeah, it seemed right to have a call to action after all of this, because it's great to educate and help with the healing process. But I really feel like if you can do something, if it's a simple email or a simple phone call or signing a petition, that's very important. That's how I was raised. My parents taught me to take action and that social justice requires being involved. And so that's why this was really important to us. Speaking of taking action, Joyce Short has made her life all about taking action. She's advocated for survivors all around the country and has succeeded in helping them secure justice. In fact, a federal prosecutor cited her work in a case that put a serial rapist with over 30 victims behind bars. She's also the recipient of a Women of Distinction honor from the New York State Assembly and the author of the book, Carnal Abuse by Deceit. A memoir of her survivorship, the book details her real-life struggle to recognize what happened to her, to break free from a toxic relationship, and to regain her dignity. It's one of the first books to describe rape by fraud, dispel myths about why people remain with abusive partners, and establish what you can do if it ever happens to you or someone you care about.
Writing the book allowed her to create the Consent Awareness Network, CAN, whose mission is to correctly define consent in penal codes across the U.S. and around the world. I was shocked to learn that they don't have those after our conversation. Her second book, Your Consent, The Key to Conquering Sexual Assault, which I finished yesterday, is a resource that is being consulted by policymakers nationally and globally as they seek solutions for combating and prosecuting sex crimes.
She also helped write the language in Bill A6540. You can read the bill at newyorkstate.gov. Just look up Bill A6540, and it's also in our show notes. Joyce joined us, along with Nina Lucas, who serves as Chief of Staff and Consent Outreach Ambassador for the Consent Awareness Network, to help us understand why codifying consent matters.
Here it is, our conversation with Joyce Short and Nina Lucas of the Consent Awareness Network, hashtag FGKIA, hashtag justice.
Boom sauce.
Sinking down to the depths of the ocean.
Welcome, Joyce. Welcome, Nina.
Thank you for having us.
Hi there. Thank you.
Thanks for being on. So after our call last week, we asked you how we could help. I just turned to Sarah and I said, that's our last episode. That's how we're going to end this season. Consent. Because the whole origin of how Sarah and I got involved and how we found ourselves in our personal situation revolved around nebulous consent. And I thought, what better way to end our season than to button it with something that quantifies the terms of consent. So thank you all for your work, number one. And number two, thanks for making the time for us.
Yeah. And just to add, like Nippy said, we were pretty fired up. And I have been as well. Just the word itself is so triggering for me, to be honest, because as we mentioned in our phone call, there are still people who are loyal. And the answer for them is, well, they said yes, they consented. And that is, you know, it just makes my stomach turn into knots, because I think as anyone who is out of the Nexium bubble and can see this with clear eyes can see clearly that these women did not consent and would not have said yes had they known all the facts. So this is a hot topic for me and is related obviously to what we went through, but is obviously very relevant to many things that are happening currently. So we're very excited to talk to you and to hear your perspective on all of this.
What inspired you all? What led you all to where you are right now, where you find yourself defining the term for a legislative bill in New York? How'd you all get here?
Well, I actually have written three books about it. The first one.
I read one yesterday.
Okay. And the first one is really about the story that happened to me. I'm a sexual assault survivor. And in fact, I was assaulted by all three ways covered under model penal code, by force, by duress, and by deception. And as a result of that, I went looking for the reasons and trying to find out why nothing could be done about it, why this happens, why people think that they can get away with it, and what we can do about it. And what I discovered in my journey was that consent is not defined anywhere in any penal code, either across the United States or around the world. And that deficiency enables sexual predators to get away with what they do, and predators of all types. Consent is not simply related to sexual conduct. It's related to all conduct between human beings as adults. We all need consent whenever we interact with people.
Excellent. And what about you, Nina?
Well, like many activists and advocates, I started this work because something very bad happened to me. And when it did, I remember very vividly saying, I'm going to do something about this. I'm going to fight. I'm going to have a vigorous response. And when I started to ask about it or try to report it or try to get some assistance, I realized very quickly that the law and regulations were something that did not back me up. I did some more research and I found the work of the Consent Awareness Network and Joyce Short. And I had this like Shazam, Eureka light bulb moment. And I said, wow, this is the foundation and the crux of what's going on and why I'm not able to get the justice that I deserve. And so that motivated me. And even more so, I didn't want what happened to me to happen to anyone else. And so that's when I ultimately reached out to Joyce. I followed her for a while, you know, fangirled her from afar. And then, you know, got in touch with her. And I just grew very, very committed to this work, because this is the solution, not only to what happened to me, but it can help so many other people. And that is why I'm here today.
When you said there wasn't legislation to back you up, without, you don't have to necessarily share the content, what was it you found was missing in our penal laws that you didn't feel like you had recourse?
Well, consent wasn't defined. I mean, I sought legal advice. I and a number of women with me went to see an attorney. And the attorney, he played devil's advocate with us. And he was asking all these questions. And he was outlining very clearly, although he even didn't really understand what the deficit mm-hmm. was, that there was not really a direct way and a clear way for him to help me or for us to get justice. You know, that just further solidified my commitment to saying, I've got to do something about it. And of course, I didn't know what it was at the time. But that's when I came about in my research, again, to find Joyce's work and what she was trying to do.
Yeah, it's interesting. The congruencies I hear in a lot of these cases is oftentimes the victims have to find themselves in a position where they have to educate the legal systems.
Very true.
Mm-hmm. And legislators.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and legislators as to what the actual abuse is. There's a particular passage that I highlighted from your book that I thought was interesting. It says, in cases where victims are defrauded for sex, having significant proof and reasonable basis for believing the deception keeps the bar high for prosecuting offenders and eliminates de minimis claims. These same requirements exist in prosecuting all other crimes involving fraud as well. They must be applied in sexual assault by fraud, deception, or impersonation cases. I thought that was a pretty telling statement and one that, to me, exposes the inconsistencies of what goes on in something that involves your physical person, where there's no clear definition. You can't go to someone and say you've been defrauded physically. And there's nothing in our legal system that defines that. So that just popped off the page when I read it.
So unfortunately, when it comes to crimes against the person rather than crimes against property, we consider crimes against the person to be more heinous under the law than crimes against property. And the most heinous of all crimes, other than murder, murder is the most heinous crime. The second most heinous crime is rape or sexual assault. And yet, even though we consider it a more heinous crime, we don't apply the definition of fraud, which is a weapon. It's a weapon just like any other weapon,
sure.
Right? We use it as a weapon in getting your money or getting your property, but we don't relate to it as a weapon in getting your compliance when you shouldn't be complying. You're very much aware that you're agreeing, but consent is not simply agreement. Consent is freely given, knowledgeable and informed agreement. And if you're not really giving knowledgeable and informed agreement, just like all of those clients of Bernie Madoff's, you're not consenting.
One of my thoughts was when this happened to me was the Lemon Law about, you know, cars. If you buy a car that's been misrepresented or they turn back the odometer and you buy it in good faith, you know, there are protections for that and recourse for you. And I thought, wow, we have lemon laws for cars, but we don't have any, you know, there's no protection for your autonomy. And so I just thought that was outrageous. And it was just one of those things that also really gave me a lot of impetus, made me want to work on this even more.
One of the cases that I think explains the problem very well was what happened in the Bill Cosby case, where the judge, well, I'll let you tell it, the judge offered his definition.
Well, he didn't offer a definition, actually.
Well, when asked about consent.
Okay, we all know that there are two juries in the Cosby case, and the first jury couldn't make a decision. They ended that case with a hung jury. But in each instance, the jurors asked the judge, Stephen O'Neill, for the definition for consent. And O'Neill said to them initially, that's a question that cannot be answered. And then he went on to say, you're reasonable people, use your common sense. So that happened in the first trial, and it happened again in the second trial. In the second trial, the foreperson for the jury was a woman by the name of Cheryl Carmel. And Cheryl is a cybersecurity expert and was very familiar with the definition for consent that's provided through General Data Protection Regulation, which governs your cybersecurity on the internet. And what I found very interesting about GDPR is that it went into effect at the same time that I presented my TEDx talk. And the definition that I presented in my TEDx talk was freely given, knowledgeable, and informed agreement. And the definition provided by GDPR is freely given, knowledgeable, and informed agreement. And that definition is utilized throughout the world today. It's international law. And everyone doing business on the internet, if you want to do business at all with any European country, you have to abide by that statute. It's something that we apply with a great deal of fervor in keeping people mm-hmm. safe on the internet, but yet we're not applying it in keeping people safe from sexual predators and other forms of crime. That needs to be changed. So the reasonable people standard for clarification is a standard that's used in all law. All juries are actually supposed to represent the thinking of a reasonable person. Would a reasonable person have known? Should they have known? Would they have known? that they were actually committing a crime. So there was a very specific reason why Judge O'Neill used that description of the jury. He was reminding them that their function in law is to represent the thought process of a reasonable person. And so he said to them, "You're reasonable people, use your common sense." And the problem with that is that if every jury makes up their mind about what their common sense is, then we have no continuity under the law. And here in the United States, we're all granted under the 14th Amendment of the United States equal protection under the law, which means that a crime has to be consistent. So if the main function that word consent creates for the law is to define when or when not a crime actually takes place, then we can't have it be something that every jury decides. There has to be consistency in it from one jury to the next jury. If you want continuity under the law, then of course you need to be providing that continuity by providing a consistent definition. All penal code has provisions. Those are the statutes that tell you how to behave or how not to behave. And they also have definitions. And those definitions clarify the wording that's contained in those provisions. So if there's anything that's murky, then it has to be clarified through the definition. And consent is obviously something that's very murky and needs clear definition. It's a word. It has a definition just like every other word in the English language or in any language that you speak. And that definition in English is freely given, knowledgeable, and informed agreement.
Why do you think it doesn't have a definition in this context yet?
Okay. You've asked a loaded question. And the answer to that is because your legislators didn't really want to have that definition. Mm. When you look back at where our laws came from, the reality is that our laws began with chattel. In fact, if you go back to ancient Rome, where laws pretty much began as we know them today, in Rome, sexual assault or rape was only a crime against a virgin daughter of a taxpaying citizen. So it really wasn't about the harm that happened to her as a person. It was about the fact that her father's property had been stolen from him in a way that couldn't be recuperated, right?
Wow.
There's no way to take a person's virginity away from the father. It wasn't really away from her. It was the loss to the father. And it didn't matter if the father owned slaves and raped a slave. That was no big deal. Nobody cared. So rape wasn't really a crime against the person. It was a crime against the father's property because the daughter was his chattel. And that's where our laws began. And since that time, we've put little band-aids to make changes, but we're missing the whole point. And that is that that person is what's of value here. It's not the question of property. But yet we've come through all of these centuries and all of these generations continuing the concept that somehow a woman is chattel, owned by her husband or owned by her father, or that a woman's function is entertainment for her husband or for whomever he has this relationship with. She was not considered, even until 100 years ago, we didn't even have the right to vote. Our role in society has not been a complete recognition of our rights as human beings. And we're still trying to pass the Equal Rights Amendment in order to get that recognition.
We tell our stories. We change the world. A Little Bit Culty is proud to support the hashtag I Got Out project, which empowers survivors of cultic abuse to share their stories online as a catalyst for education, prevention, and healing. Learn more about the hashtag I Got Out movement and find resources at igotout.org.
There's a passage from your book, I think, underscores what you're talking about. According to Cosby's, quote, common sense, end quote, laws, underhandedly drugging the woman he enticed to his home under, quote, mentorship was a perfectly acceptable way to induce sex, since our laws fail to specify what consent really is.
True.
I just have to be forthright that as you were talking about chattel, I'm having like a, I don't know if it's a, I'm just having a an emotional response. Did anyone learn a language in high school and then let it go and then have regrets about that later? If you're anything like me, then maybe you'll relate. I did French all the way up into 12th grade and then I let it go. I mean, I lived in Montreal for a few years and, you know, practiced a bit, but it just slipped away. And then I found Babbel. Babbel is the language learning app that sold more than 10 million subscriptions. And thanks to Babbel's addictively fun and easy little bite-sized language lessons, I've been able to get back my French. I've actually found learning French to be fun again. And c'est vrai, je parle français. With Babbel, you only need 10 minutes to complete a lesson, so you can start having real-life conversations in a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Other language learning apps use AI for their lesson plans, but Babbel lessons were created by over 150 language experts and voiced by real native speakers, not computers. Their teaching method has been scientifically proven to be effective. And with Babbel, you can choose from 14 different languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, and German. Formidable. That means wonderful in French. Plus, Babbel's speech recognition technology helps you to improve your pronunciation and accent. Clearly still working on that. There are so many ways to learn with Babbel. In addition to lessons, you can access podcasts, games, videos, stories, and even live classes. Plus, it comes with a 20-day money-back guarantee. Start your new language learning journey today with Babbel. Right now, when you purchase a 3-month Babbel subscription, you'll get an additional 3 months for free. That's 6 months for the price of 3. Just go to babbel.com and use promo code CULTY. That's BABBEL.com, code CULTY. Our team at A Little Bit Culty Podcasts loves the Blood Ties podcast because it is gritty and current and fascinating. It's also a little bit culty. Blood Ties, the award-winning audio drama from Wondery, returns for its third season, Strange Days, with another thrilling story about greed, power, and deception. 5 years have passed since Eleanor, played by Julian Jacobs of Community, took over as CEO of the infamous Richland family empire, alongside her half-brother, Santino, played by Christian Navarro of 13 Reasons Why. Together, they decide to invest the family fortune in a groundbreaking, controversial new drug. But as shocking revelations about the new treatment emerge, Eleanor and Santino go to every length to protect their control of the Richland family dynasty. As Eleanor's father always said, medicine is a bloody business. Listen to Blood Ties, Season 3, Strange Days, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, or you can binge the whole series now, early and ad-free, by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app. I guess to it. Or like maybe a PTSD response, because, you know, when I was waking up to what had happened to me and spoke to people who were still loyal to Keith and were saying, you know, gaslighting me and saying, well, what was bad about it? And what are you making it mean? And me saying, well, I have his initials on my body. And that means for him that I'm owned by him like cattle. And the response, well, it's only that if you make it mean that. And I said, no, that's what it is. When you brand someone or something, or specifically cattle, you are the property of the farmer. And I just have to be honest, but what's going on in my brain right now is just how the depth of the misogyny and the sadistic nature of Keith, in this case, to take his narcissistic, chauvinistic, sadistic, disgusting, I don't even have the words for it, vision to the next level. And
well, that there was laws to protect it too.
Yeah. And also how when I went, as anyone who's followed the story knows, initially to the FBI, and also have since learned not to the right department or person, they said, well, that doesn't sound good, but it also doesn't seem illegal because you consented.
Yeah. They, people have a terrible misconception about what consent is.
So what the fuck? So because I said, master, would you brand me? It would be an honor, which was also in the New York Times article. And I'm not sure if I've said this anywhere else, but until that article came out, I didn't even remember that I had said that because I was in such duress. But one of the other DOS members that Barry Meyer, the reporter, talked to, remembered that. And I was like, holy shit, we did say that. And of course, if you followed the trial, know that Keith had instructed Allison Mack to tell the women to say and put their hands up over their head so it looked like a sacrifice. He instructed her to tell the women to ask to be branded so it looked consensual. Mm-hmm. That's a soundbite that was used in the trial. But he obviously did the research that he needed to do to say, how can I set this up so I'll be protected?
Yeah.
I'm okay now. Well, I just had to get that off my chest.
He understood it.
That's the thing. He'd been doing this for years. He'd been abusing people emotionally for years. And he took it to the next level.
He understood that there probably wasn't legislation. And really, I mean, even how the media kind of handle it, they demonstrated their lack of understanding as well with it, because they normally aren't in a position where they're really that empathetic to the victim, unless it's really spelled out that they were a victim. Even women, I mean, you know, it's not just men. Women tend to have this thing, well, what were they doing? And it's you can always get an understanding or an impression of how people understand a problem with their response to it. In cases where people immediately go to the victim and question their sanity as opposed to the perpetrator, to me, is a clear indication of what you're dealing with.
I call it the short skirt response.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great.
And it's pervasive. Yeah. It's a pervasive misunderstanding.
Right. And that shouldn't inform any sort of laws on abuse or anything like that. You know, with every other domain, none of that stuff comes into any sort of questioning, but only in the sexual domain does it really become an issue.
And you're saying that's because of where these laws started and how would they have not been adjusted properly?
Exactly.
And the thing too is, I think you have a society and a system that reinforces it, both male and female. I think it's a whole education thing. And I think that it comes back to what we're talking about, where the victim often spends a lot of time educating the public, and the public is very resistant to this education. Legislation, and this is, I think, where I want you guys to come in and really talk about the three types of consent, because the importance of this is, once you start to quantify terms, abuses in the emotional realm become way more easy to quantify. When it's become physical, it's normally an effect of people abusing others in an emotional realm first. There has to be some sort of manipulation. There has to be some sort of abuse of power. There has to be some sort of fraud that comes on. And those are hard to quantify.
Three types of agreement. Consent is one type of agreement.
Very special kind of agreement.
You know, each type of agreement is not necessarily consent. When you're agreeing under duress, you're like coercion, you're acquiescing, right? Acquiescing is agreement under duress. When someone is defrauding you, you could be assenting. That means agreeing on the face of it, right? You're told something, you have no reason to doubt what you're being told, and you're agreeing on the face of it, but they're lying their head off, not telling you the truth, right? So on the face of it, you're agreeing, but you're not consenting, because consent is freely given, knowledgeable, and agreement. So there are different types of agreement, but they're not all consent.
What's missing is the knowledge and the information.
Exactly. Exactly. So forcible compulsion, no, that's not freely given. Coercion, that's not freely given. And what Keith Raniere did, he misused trust. Every human being, we're all built to bond. We have brain chemistry that enables us to bond with others. And in order to bond with others, we have to trust others. So we've been given by Mother Nature all of this infrastructure in our brains and hormones and peptides that enable us to bond. Because let's face it, when we were put on Earth, it was necessary for us to form tribes for our safety, right? Because one person alone against the lions and the tigers and the bears, we wouldn't be able to preserve our species. And that is one of the basic elements of our humanity, is to preserve our species. So Mother Nature made us intelligent so that we could all bond together and create tribes and act toward protecting ourselves. So we all have trust to whatever degree, and it's going to be different among people. Some have more trust than others. Some have less trust than others. And a person like Raniere doesn't seem to have much trust or much caring at all about other human beings. So either you're a trusting human being or you're going to swing the other way and become more of a predator. And a person like Keith Raniere, he recognizes everybody has trust issues. He knows how to manipulate those ability to trust in order to gain your trust into doing things that you otherwise wouldn't do. And that's how he gets away with doing it. And our laws, unfortunately, allows people to be predators because they're lumping consent in with every other form of agreement. And they're not the same. You can agree on the face of something, but that doesn't mean that you're consenting. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened to you in your circumstance with Keith Raniere. You agreed to something, but you didn't consent to it. And that's why you feel ripped to shreds because this person who you trusted did something horrific to you mm-hmm. that would not have done otherwise. And nobody believes you or nobody considers it to be a crime. Mm-hmm. That's actually even to a greater extent, even more insulting because sure. but when society doesn't understand it, then you become invisible. It's like I suffered this terrible harm and nobody recognizes or validates the harm that I suffered. And that's even a greater, more devastating, long-lasting pain they go through mm-hmm. life with. Mm-hmm. And the lack of justice that you receive as a result of society not recognizing what consent really is and that you were actually harmed.
And I can imagine that that would be the case for many people who didn't receive justice like that we did with Keith going to prison for 120 years, although it wasn't necessarily for the branding, but for his other abuses of power and malicious activity. It was a relief. But until that moment, I did feel that. And I think what's niggling for me, and it's just a handful of people, but for the loyalists, we call them the people who still stand by Keith.
And to be clear, it's a handful of people.
It's a handful. So this is not, I don't have this for the society at large anymore, but it's still this thing that I know that there's people out there saying, Sarah consented, she agreed to this, then she changed her mind and she had a tantrum and she's looking for attention. The victim shaming. Since you are both experts in this area, what would you say to somebody who can't see that this wasn't consensual?
Well, I just want to point out that also you're getting ridiculed as well. And so that's adds to the insult. And I just wanted to say, and Joyce can follow up here, is that I really felt compelled to reach out to you because I was seeing, and in a lot of instances and in my own instance as well, that the self-blame, the self-doubt, you know, your reality comes into question. You say, well, am I not a good judge of character? Is my discernment off? You know, I just wanted to let you know and to talk about this with you to tell you, you know, your agreement was not consent. And that, I think for me, it made a great difference in how I approach things, how I went through healing. It takes a lot of that load mm-hmm. off of one's back when you say, you know what, you're right. I didn't sign up for this, as they say, or this is not what I was instructed or was told. And I made my agreement based on what I knew to be the truth. I think this is a really healing concept too, mm-hmm. to understand consent and to know the differences in the agreements. And I think that that's really, really valuable in cult and religious abuse as well.
Thank you.
Very, very applicable.
Thank Absolutely. You. I appreciate you saying that. And I think that our listenership, while it's not entirely abuse survivors of different contexts, most of our listenership is. And you just reminded me that there's this crazy ironic point to this aspect of the story, which is that in our first 5-day training, there was a module called To Be or Not to Be / Commitment to Reality. Okay. And one of the question sets was, what happens when you withhold information from somebody's decision-making process? And the answer to it on the video is, Nibby, you want to answer that?
You lower their self-esteem.
You lower their self-esteem and you
limit
lower
their options
in reality. And it's very clear that this is not a good thing to do and that you should never withhold information from someone's decision-making process. Ever. So the fact that Keith was doing it the whole time and probably enjoying it, and then specifically with Das withholding the fact that he was involved, the beautiful symbol of sisterhood was in fact not the symbol of sisterhood, but his initials, something that, by the way, they knew when they did to us, and specifically had just talked amongst themselves that nobody would figure it out. Isn't that shocking? They knew what it was, withheld it, and didn't think that we would figure it out.
It's outrageous.
It is outrageous.
Yeah. But going back to your question about what to do about these people that don't get it, keep in mind that to some degree, they're going to be motivated by guilt.
Right.
Right. They would have to acknowledge their part in harming you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's not something that some of these folks are willing to do.
No.
No.
That's too hard.
But there's also the question of what I was expressing previously, and that's that your brain infrastructure, you know, can make you either a very caring, loving, nurturing human being, or it could make you a predator, right? It's not simply the DNA that you were born with. It's also the impacts that your early development have on your psyche. And so there are a lot of things that go into how a person responds in life. Some of it is your early childhood development or other things that might happen to you along the way that make you the way you are. And it's very difficult to get people to change. Mm-hmm. Enlightenment sometimes works. Sometimes they ultimately begin to recognize the wrongdoing, you know, the incorrect way that they're thinking. Sometimes they don't. And sometimes they don't because there's too much guilt and shame in that recognition. And sometimes because they're simply, you know, their brain is just functioning this way, and that's just the way they are. Mm-hmm. And some people will recognize when they've done something wrong to you and be apologetic and be nurturing and be helpful and be supportive. We're all born into families and we expect those families to be supportive, and it comes as a shock when they're not. And we learn as we go through life that not everybody is as supportive as they really ought to be. Mm-hmm. And you learn who your friends are and who your family really are.
I've certainly learned just that. That's very true.
As I'm sitting here and I'm hearing these definitions of consent, and it seems to me, you know, if you look at our current legal system, a lot of it was formed without these definitions, and it allowed a lot of other things that didn't have a definition of consent to thrive. And so as the definition of consent hopefully takes a foothold in our legal system, a lot of other domains will suffer, quote unquote, or evolve based on the definition of consent. I can think of a handful right now that will not thrive in the way that they thrive right now and that are benefiting from not having a definition of consent. So while this is the domain it seems to be getting its foothold and consciousness is being raised, we talked about Cosby. I think Harvey Weinstein was one we mentioned. And then hopefully Keith, there seems to be a wave of talk in this domain that I think is positive, and hopefully, you know, we can be a platform and hopefully we can get this moving and help you guys get this through best we can with our platform. I don't know that we're big enough yet, but I think the conversations, having the conversations and is a great start. So I thank you guys and commend you guys for your efforts. And it's been a pleasure to have the conversation and be aligned with you.
And to feel less alone.
Yeah. People who have celebrity and that have recognition, we really need to have more broadcast into the public domain. It shouldn't take 90 people being harmed by Weinstein to bring him to justice. What one person should be all that needs to be harmed in order for our laws to recognize that something terrible had happened to that person. And each person's life is valuable. But right now we're at a position where, you know, it took all of you folks with Ranieri, and it takes all of the folks with Weinstein. It took all of the folks with Cosby. But what about the individual person? Unless we get consent clearly defined in our laws, we will never get to the point where one person is harmed and can go to the police, and the police can say, yes, absolutely, what happened to you was without your consent, and can take action. And when that begins to happen, then you're going to see a shift in how people conduct themselves.
For sure.
I sure hope so.
Yeah. They're not going to want to be locked up as a result of doing what they do.
It will form morality.
Exactly. It will form a new morality.
So what can we do? What's the call to action for our listeners? What are some simple things that they can do if they feel inspired to be a part of this change?
Right now, we have a couple of things that will support the legislation. we have a change.org petition, and that change.org petition, if they simply log on and sign that change.org petition, that would help us immensely.
Okay.
Another thing is we have a QR, and we'll give the QR to you so that you can put it on your site. And the QR will enable them to sign in on letters that will go to legislators that will motivate them to pass this legislation. And if anybody is an attorney or knows an attorney and can give us a memorandum of law that we can present to the legislators, that's a third thing that can happen. And any organizations that will give us organizational support letters that we can give to the legislators to show that there is a movement behind this of people demanding change, that will enable us to get the legislation passed. And we don't have much time. The legislature closes on June 10th. So people need to act and act now and get those letters to us, get that petition signed, get us information so that we can move forward quickly within the time frame that's necessary.
That's why we didn't want to wait till season two.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. The other thing, if you guys have time, the book by Joyce is Your Consent, The Key to Conquering Sexual Assault. It's 55 pages, 36, really, because the last 19 are what the actual legislation laws in your state. So you can see the inconsistencies that Joyce has laid out for you. It's a quick read. It's an informative read and at times shocking. So I highly recommend people pick that up just to educate yourself on this, because if you don't think it affects you, think again.
That's true. I also wanted to just point out that Joyce has a very informative TED talk, TEDx talk that she,
That's right.
Yes, that she gave at a girls' high school, Catholic high school. And it's 17 minutes. I would say that that's a great introduction to her work and what we're trying to do here.
I'll make sure to put that in the show notes as well.
Everything will be in the show
including
notes,
including the links to all of your social media. And
thank you.
We'll start, of course, using the hashtag FGKIA. And
let's just be in touch. This is our final episode of the season.
Well,
we've
said that four times, but this is actually our final episode.
And so we're going to have a little more time to do stuff actively.
Is there anything that we didn't ask you or that you'd like to cover to wrap things up here for our audience?
No, we just really appreciate this forum with you. And I'm really pleased that we got to just discuss consent so you can have a better understanding of what happened to you. Mm-hmm. And get some solace from that.
Thank you guys. I did.
Excellent. What we're after here is to make the world a safer place, and defining consent, that's absolutely crucial and the key to getting that done.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for reaching out and not only informing, but also supporting.
I have a goal. We open season two with good news about this.
That would be great. From your mouth to God's ears. Right.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Right. Thanks again.
Take care, guys.
Bye-bye. What a great episode.
Are we done feeling? Is that what you're saying?
Well, no. I'm feeling too. But think about how the implications of this. If you look at how our current society is set up right now, it's set up with the ignorance of consent. It's set up for people to abuse to a certain way. Look, Churchill's comment, democracy is the worst form of government except for all the others, right? Like, this is the best we've come up with as a human team, and it didn't really address consent very well. And that's lack of foresight or whatever. I mean, I think, you know, some of the amendments attempt to do that, but they don't really lock it down as succinctly as it could have been locked down. And people saw that and found loopholes in it and were able to abuse their power as a result of that. One of the things, unfortunately, it comes to a head most emotionally in the sexual abuse. But if you look at other domains like banking, and like if people understood what was going on in our banking systems and our other domains too, they'd be more outraged. And consent, if people can go in and cite, "I didn't consent to this," and really expose how they did not consent to this, it really exposes a lot of other abuses of power. So while it's coming to a head in the sexual abuse domain, it can really crumble a lot of other domains just with the simple, "I didn't agree to this."
Well, I agree with you, and I think that's important. But what's emotional for me right now is what I'm more connected to is what this could do if people actually change the laws regarding consent in the sexual assault realm.
This is the thing too. She's like, they have these definitions. Like she used the Bernie Madoff example. They have definitions. I didn't consent to you taking my money. And the law came in and took care of it. Even how they do get the people that abuse the consent laws, it's not through the definition of consent. They find them in another area.
I hope this fires people up as much as it did for us to take action and also to apply it to whatever situation they're processing in terms of their own healing or their own decision to take action or not. Because I know there's a lot of people that we're in touch with who listen to the podcast who have not held their abusers to task.
Right.
And so maybe this will change. For me, is that it's not just talking. Like, we can actually do something here. We've had some feedback from some of our listeners over season one that they wish that we wouldn't get political. But sorry. Well, not sorry. This isn't a political issue. This is a human one. Sexual assault is a bipartisan problem. And if getting behind a piece of legislation that helps close loopholes and makes it easier to put sexual predators behind bars makes us political, well, go ahead and smash that unfollow button. Behold the field where I grow my fucks, and you will see that it is barren.
Good one.
Sorry, not sorry.
Our goal is to open up season two with good news about new legislation in the New York State. I think it's about time.
Conversations are great, especially if they lead to inspired action. Please take action.
This is definitely and for sure our final episode of season one. We're going to take a 3 to 4 week hiatus and hopefully come back with good news and 12 new baller guests.
Thank you again for all of your support.
I'm Deuces.
Happy anniversary.
Oh, happy anniversary.
I consent to being married to you.
To being married to me.
I wouldn't change a thing.
I'd change a few things. Not going to lie to you. I'd change a couple things.
As long as it could end us up right here,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, yeah. Just a couple amendments, but yeah. It'd be
great. I love you, babe.
I love you, too.
Mwah.
Mwah. Bye, guys. Sinking down to the depths of the ocean.
We're going to be back soon with more episodes of A Little Bit Culty with more experts and survivors and sometimes experts who are survivors and some familiar faces from The Vow.
If you got suggestions or questions on upcoming topics, find us on Instagram at A Little Bit Culty.
And for more background on what got me to this point, my memoir, Scarred, the true story of how I escaped Nexium, the cult that bound my life, is available on Amazon, Audible, and wherever books are sold.
If you'd like to help us spread the word about A Little Bit Culty podcast, please give us a 5-star review and tell your friends to subscribe.
Like literally take their phone out and press subscribe.
5 stars. That's 5 of them.
We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and every major listening app. A Little Bit Culty is executive produced by me, your co-host, Sarah Edmondson, and Anthony Nippy Ames. Associate producer is Jess Tardy. Produced, edited, mixed, and mastered by Citizens of Sound. Our amazing theme song, Cultivated, is by John Bryant and co-written by Nigel Asselin. Additional original music is composed by Will Rutherford.
We'll be back with more episodes. Until then,
don't join a cult. I'm Sarah Edmondson, and thanks for listening to A Little Bit Culty. Our team at A Little Bit Culty Podcasts loves the Blood Ties podcast because it is gritty and current and fascinating. It's also a little bit culty. Blood Ties, the award-winning audio drama from Wondery, returns for its third season, Strange Days, with another thrilling story about greed, power, and deception. 5 years have passed since Eleanor, played by Julian Jacobs of Community, took over as CEO of the infamous Richland family empire, alongside her half-brother, Santino, played by Christian Navarro of 13 Reasons Why. Together, they decide to invest the family fortune in a groundbreaking, controversial new drug. But as shocking revelations about the new treatment emerge, Eleanor and Santino go to every length to protect their control of the Richland family dynasty. As Eleanor's father always said, medicine is a bloody business. Listen to Blood Ties, Season 3, Strange Days, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, or you can binge the whole series now, early and ad-free, by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app.